10 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center in Portland. 15X is a local hip-hop show that features a wide variety of local hip-hop and R&B artists from Portland. Again, that's 15X on Friday, February 28th from 5 to 10 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center, 400 Southeast 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hello, we are Pacific Underground on KBOO Community Radio. Our show is on hiatus until May, and until then, we are looking for new members to join the collective. Pacific Underground is the only show by and for Asians and Pacific Islanders in the Pacific Northwest. There is no experience necessary to join, just an enthusiasm for API content and stories through the medium of community radio. If you are Asian or Pacific Islander and are interested in joining, please contact us at pacificunderground@kboo.org, all one word, or message us on Instagram at PACUnderground.
I've traveled around this country from shore to shining shore. It really made me wonder the things I heard and saw. I saw the weary farmer a plowing sod and loam. I heard the auction hammer just a knocking down his home. But the banks are made of marble with a guard at every door, and the bolts are stuffed with silver that the farmer sweated for.
You get it? You get it?
Yeah. It's a little on the nose. Yeah, but I get it.
No,
yeah.
I mean, not subtle.
No.
But
no,
true.
That's what I mean.
But true, and today we're going to talk about how true it is.
That the banks are made of marble with a guard at every door?
No, the banks hold the lease on everything.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris, and I'm really angry.
No.
Yeah, I am. I mean, enough is enough. You know, enough is enough. Anyway,
but see, that's just it. Enough might not nearly be enough. We might need four more years of enough.
Well, we're going to get four more years of enough if the things don't get together.
If my you point exactly.
Yeah, yeah, really. Right. Scary. 2318187. I want to hear from all of you out there. But first, I got a little lecturing to do.
Yeah, you brought a book?
I bought a book. It's called Capital.
Yeah. For those of you not familiar with books, they are an antiquated means of preserving and transferring knowledge.
Antiquated?
Yes.
Antiquated.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Well, I don't know where to go with that. This is a book by Thomas Piketty. He's a Frenchman, and he's an economist. And
well, why are we wasting our time, then? Frenchman?
Yeah, right.
Sorry, go ahead.
And he has influenced the whole field of economics, including at Berkeley. And by the way, it would have been Harvard, but they didn't want the guys who were talking this kind of talk.
The French?
The people at Harvard. Anyway, the 21st century capitalism, capital in the 21st century, Thomas Piketty, P-I-K-E-T-T-Y. This is a book that is thick and hassly and really worth reading. Economics is always hard and kind of, you know, dry. But this is an important book because what this book shows and what has been shown since the book's publication by a number of economic experts, is that inevitably, in this system of capitalism, money accrues at the top and the rest of us suffer in consequence. It's structured that way.
So it's functioning as designed.
Yes, exactly. Okay. That's the plan.
All right.
Okay, now, you know, you can argue about that, but it ain't not true. And the reason that this is so has to do with a pattern of economic behavior. The money at the top always grows. But when you have a president like Donald Trump, it not only grows, but it multiplies. I mean, he just gave away the barn, the cow, the horse, the milk, the bread, and so on.
For all of it.
For all of it, yeah. So I'm thinking about just how to go ahead with this. But this is the stuff that breaks one's heart. Economics is the real science of what's going on.
The dismal science.
The dismal science, exactly.
Juan Sponte.
And there's really no argument about it.
You should mention Piketty's very simple equation.
What's that?
R is greater than G. What that means is, and we're talking about the ruling class here, R means the rate of return on capital investment. So how much you're making from your hedge funds, from your real estate, from your stocks, your bonds, et cetera, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's R is greater than G, meaning the rate of growth in the economy. And for a long time now, many years, in our global capitalist world, that number R has been significantly greater than that number G, meaning that why, if I'm a member of the ruling class, would I have any incentive to invest in G, which is the overall growth of the economy, meaning things like infrastructure, education, healthcare, and so on? Why should I invest in any of those things when the rate of return is so much higher for my investment on the R side of things?
You know, it's almost as if you have read this stuff.
I haven't read the entire book, yeah. But I couldn't get my hands on it. Remember when it came out a couple summers ago?
Yeah.
It was selling out everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, so whether people actually read it, another question.
Right. But it was I remember at the time thinking how unusual that a dry book about economics, can't stay on the shelves.
Well, and it's had enormous influence. There's two guys now at Berkeley who essentially are carrying on this same thing. Emmanuel Saez and Gabriel Zuman. These people are now ensconced as members of the faculty at Berkeley. They would have been hired at Harvard, but the president of Harvard nixed them.
Hmm.
It's a true fact. Didn't want them. Too lefty.
I see.
This is this book, Capital, by Piketty. And Piketty, these people were his students.
Mm-hmm.
This is so important, so vitally significant, and the formulation that you just said, that people really need to understand that this is an inevitable consequence of capitalism. This is the flaw, in economic terms, of capitalism.
That exists to enrich and ensconce the ruling class.
Yeah.
And even after it's done so, it will continue to do so.
Yes.
At the expense of everybody else.
Absolutely.
As long as R remains greater than G.
Yeah, and that will always be in this system. I mean, everything that could modify, that could alter things in a more just way. For example, national health care program.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Bernie, national health care program, a reasonable educational system. A good device to make sure that people have housing. All of that, which is doable in this vast and wealthy country, cannot happen as long as the money's being sucked to the top.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
And I don't know how much more we need to explain that to people, but...
Well, this whole formulation begs a very important question, I think. Right.
Yeah.
If we look at that equation, R greater than G,
mm-hmm.
and we presume that basic formulation drives every decision made by the ruling class, where should I put my money for maximum return? And if that equation is driving that money away from investing in infrastructure, it begs the question, why amongst the ruling class is there no one with moral and ethical fiber able to perceive that this is ruinous and voluntarily change their habits of investment and encourage their fellow members of the ruling class to do the same?
Well, that has to do with ethics, morality, and other things that don't go together.
Yes,
with capitalism.
But all things that do exist and play a huge role in our everyday lives.
Yeah.
And the absence of which in the context of capitalism is glaring. For example, walk anywhere in this town and you will see encampments of houseless people.
Yes.
Now, under the formulation we're talking about, where the rate of return is greater for capital investment than for investment in infrastructure, there's nothing to be done. You throw up your hands. Oh, I can't do anything about that.
Well,
I got to put my money where it's going to work for me.
And here's a specific irony of that. they are pretending in this city that if we densify the city, it'll all be taken care of, as if the housing that will be built is going to be affordable for all those poor people in the street. It's not.
It's silly, but we digress.
Yes.
I think you get my point.
Yes, I get you.
But, you know, why should I, as a member of the ruling class, be moved to address this problem I see every day? Why should I do that when I should quite obviously be putting my money where it'll work for me?
Well, and you and I, involved in systems of savings for our future collapse, mm-hmm. we also have to make the same choice that these capitalists do. Where do I put my money to make the best amount of money for my retirement?
Oh, indeed. Yeah.
And we can argue about that, but this is so real, so overwhelming, that it's amazing that it isn't even taught in the schools.
Yeah, it is amazing.
And it is very sad.
Yeah.
And we are looking at a situation now where a rich guy is jumps into the Democratic race, dumps $1 billion into that race, gets shown to be exactly what he is by Elizabeth Warren.
Was that not magnificent?
Oh, that was so fun.
Oh, my
goodness. That
was
so fun. I couldn't. Yeah. It was one of those good moments. So rare. So rare.
There's still a smoldering crater where Bloomberg was standing on that stage.
On the other hand, dumping all that money, if he stays with his promise to dump it no matter who gets nominated, could be a good thing.
Yeah, this is true. But again, it begs a number of huge outstanding questions. Why, for example, does the fact that Bloomberg's a billionaire, why does that so magnify his ability to determine the outcome of an election?
Because.
Why have we allowed that to be the case?
Because.
R is greater than G.
Exactly.
Right.
And folks, this is a simple compounding process, simple understanding, but it is not taught in schools in this country. It is not commonly understood by most people. Instead, we have a very peculiar kind of economic teaching, which always tells us, ooh, if you spend money, you're going to make everything go bad.
Right, and the best way to make sure everything goes good is to give more money to rich people.
Well, and one of the things that makes Trump so powerful is that he gave a bunch of money to the rich.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
and has given nothing to the poor, done nothing for the infrastructure, done nothing for healthcare, done nothing for almost anything except to make the rich richer.
But we do have a mechanism. We talked about the absence of moral and ethical thinking.
Yes.
In this context, we have a mechanism to compel, if not moral and ethical thinking, at least more moral and more ethical behavior. That is presuming a couple of things. First, that governments still have the ability to sway the behavior of the ruling class, and whether the ruling class will be able to fool enough poor folks to get them to oppose. Well, I'm kind of taking a circuitous route towards this. What I'm getting at is, can governments, through the power of taxation, compel behavior that is moral and ethical from the ruling class?
Well, and beyond that, can the people realize what's in their own interest? Lied to, and this is important, beginning way back in before World War I and in World War I, there was a dreaded fear of socialism and communism, and this was the propaganda that carried itself on through World War I, because leftists opposed that war, and they were right, it was a horrible slaughter for no particular purpose, and set things up for the Nazis and other fascists. But, you know, the only example contrary to that was the Soviet Union, which was run by a crazy person, I think, in the long run. Stalin. Crazy person.
A series of crazy people.
Yeah. And the consequence of all of that is, beginning with the Cold War, we lost any thread of concern for ordinary folk. It just totally disappeared.
It was really a very, very convenient set of circumstances for ruling capitalists, was it not? We have this great world enemy, right? This other titan, the other pole in a bipolar world,
right?
That was so easily painted as destructively socialist, right?
Well, and of course, Stalin was a monster.
Well, of course he was, yeah. But it made it really easy here at home to argue against anything that even had the faintest whiff of socialism.
On the other hand, all one has to do is look at the states of Northern Europe, all of them capitalist, but they have social democracy in terms of all the needs of the people.
Yeah.
Nobody goes without health care. Nobody goes without education. Nobody goes without housing.
Yeah, it's not that hard. Really.
It really isn't that hard. Okay, we got.
Before we go there, okay. I have a quote from Harry Truman that I think speaks very well.
Harry Truman. He was an interesting president.
He was an interesting president. He said this in a speech on October the 10th, 1952. He said, "Socialism is a scare word they have hurled at every advance the people have made in the last 20 years. Socialism is what they called public power. Socialism," he's talking about electricity there.
Yeah.
"Socialism is what they called social security. Socialism is what they called farm price supports. Socialism is what they called bank deposit insurance. Socialism is what they called the growth of free and independent labor organizations. Socialism is their name for almost anything that helps all the people."
And that's still true. And
it's still true.
Even more true today. And it's very important. We got a lot of callers. So let's remind people, 231-8187. Let's go to Sean. You're on the air.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Thank you for the excellent conversation this morning. I guess the contribution I'd like to make would be the dialogue surrounding the whole notion of producers versus parasites. So you have Karl Marx coming along, you know, basically laying out the argument that the capitalist class constitute a parasite class, and that the actual producers are the workers, you know, the army of unemployed, the working class. We are the actual producers. And then, of course, Ayn Rand comes along. People like Charles Murray come along, and they basically flip that argument on its head, and they try to say that the Ubermensch, the supermen, the producers are the capitalist class, you know, the geniuses, and that the rest of us, we are the parasites, that we're basically just... we're riding in the wagon as these businessmen pull us along, you know, like we're so dependent on them, you know. And it's interesting now with the bailout of Wall Street, you know, when you had all the bond ratings agencies giving these collateralized debt obligations, AAA ratings, you see that what do? They run begging to government to bail them out. So all of this rhetoric, you know, Charles Murray, you know, attacking poor people and the bell curve, attacking our genetics, you know, saying we're not even genetically capable, like, you know, saying it's just sending bad money after good to spend money on the poor and whatnot. And then his latest book, Coming Apart, you know, does the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fascinating to me that finally, I think people are waking up that the parasite class is the capitalist class, that the workers, the poor people, we are the producers. And the capitalists are the parasites. And this is becoming more and more evident. And we have no use for parasites. The host has no use for the parasite. And so I'd like to see, with the rise of Bernie Sanders and democratic socialism, I'd like to see more and more this coming out, this open discussion of this parasite class that's completely unnecessary, that's feeding off of the host. The host has no use to support this parasite class of hypocrites who, with all of their rugged individualistic rhetoric, all their aspirational entrepreneurial rhetoric, what do? They came running to the government begging for a bailout.
Yeah, no, he's right.
Yeah, exactly. Great call. Thank you for that. It brings to mind that moment in the 2012 presidential campaign. Remember when Mitt Romney unsuspectingly spoke on a hot mic,
yeah,
talking about how more than half of the country is just hanging
out. The bartender had recorded on his phone.
Where Romney explicitly characterized the majority of Americans as parasites,
right,
as people who just hang on,
right,
and live off the fruits of the capitalist class.
Right. It's the Ayn Rand argument.
Of course it is. Yeah. But it was it was one of those times when somebody said the quiet part out loud.
Yeah.
Really. You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go back to the phones. James, you're next.
Good morning.
Good morning.
One of the main things that we need to address, if we are to come together as a people to overthrow this tyranny, is to face the reality that the media talking heads are using language to keep us divided. And I'd like to talk this. You guys always hang up on me because you can't, you experience cognitive dissonance, and you are conservative reactionaries, and I want...
Hey, I'm going to hang up on you right now. I did it.
Okay, hey.
You know, enough of that, really.
Explain.
Cognitive dissonance, my ass.
Okay, yeah, explain.
Why?
Well, because I think you cut him off for a good reason. But I like to hear you articulate him.
Well, first of all, he sings the same song every time,
mm-hmm.
and it's not correct.
Why?
Because it's not based on reality. It's not based on what's going on in the world. Now, normally I would let him go on. The other day I let a guy, apparently a person of color, complain vociferously about southern parts of the continent's people coming here to work and taking away, theoretically, jobs from ordinary people. And I allowed that. And I thought, okay, this is something that needs to be discussed and needs to be heard. But I don't need to create an environment in which I have to say this. Silly thinking dominates. I'm tired of it. I've lost my sense of humor around it.
I can't recall a time in my adult life when silly thinking didn't predominate.
Well, I'm going to try to not have that happen here.
I feel, as a leftist voter my entire voting life, that we on the left have been fighting a rear guard action as power and economic control solidifies in the hands of fewer and fewer people at the top of the income scale.
Well, that's true. I'm not going to argue with that. I can't hang up on you.
No. No.
No. And I think it's really important to understand that this is going to be a very challenging problem as we move into this election cycle, because it's possible, even likely, that Bernie Sanders will be the candidate of the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
And he is, and insists on being considered, a social democrat. Now, let's be clear. Socialism and social democracy are two different things, two different creatures. And Europe has had for a long, long time, and other places as well, social democracy. It's not the same as what happened in the Soviet Union or in the Eastern Bloc.
No, that's definitely true. Although you are, as am I, a regular reader of Paul Krugman's column in the Times.
Yeah, we're addicted, kind of addicted.
Indeed.
To Paul.
It's not a bad addiction. He's a smart guy, and usually
Nobel Prize winner.
He speaks the truth when he writes it down for the Times. Now, he has gone on record a number of times recently saying that Bernie, when it comes right down to it, doesn't need to describe himself as a democratic socialist. That is a label that he.
It's like a ball and chain.
No, that he wears as a badge of honor, and he does it to flout the judgment of the establishment, which he has done his whole career, and that Krugman thinks it's a harmful conceit, and that Bernie would be better off just jettisoning it and describing himself in some other term, because that socialist cudgel is going to be used to beat him so hard during the general election if he's the nominee.
Well, this is going to be a very interesting election cycle.
Indeed. Now, see, here's where I'm at with this. I am both thrilled and terrified at the prospect of Bernie Sanders as the Democratic nominee. I'm thrilled because no other candidate for president in my lifetime has so fully embodied my slate of political and economic prerogatives. He is as close to an ideal presidential candidate as I have yet seen in my life, right? At the same time, he has never had to face the full barrage of a GOP hate machine during a general election campaign.
Well, but I want to point out that the GOP hate machine would go after anybody.
Yes, the GOP hate machine would go after anybody, but now they got a guy who voluntarily calls himself a socialist. Now they got a guy who's got all sorts of baggage that is going to come out for the general election. There is footage of him on stage at a leftist rally in Nicaragua in the 1980s where there's a bunch of anti-American slogans being chanted. Now, that may be neither here or there in terms of his ability to be the president, but you know that the GOP is going to exploit that for every last drop of venom that they can extract from it.
He honeymooned in Moscow.
He also wrote a very complicated essay concerning women and sexuality. I'll just leave it there. You can look it up if you want to find it. That is going to be fodder to be used against him as well.
I don't know about that.
Well, go look for it.
Okay.
In the end, it's a thing where it's much like Hillary Clinton's emails. Yes, if you work through the argument and you give it due diligence and you push through to the end, you see that no, there's no there. And the same is true of this essay of Bernie's. But again, it takes a very long and complicated explanation to get there. So all of this is to say that all of this is all going to be pulled out to be used to beat Bernie bloody during the general election. And because of this conditioning, anti-leftist conditioning that much of the electorate has gone through for decades and decades, I worry about his candidacy.
Well, I think you're right to worry, but I don't know what the choice is, really. What do we want?
Well, that's just it.
I mean, who do we have? We got the inexperienced young gay guy who half the population still hasn't gotten over the idea that homosexuals are ordinary people. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
And other choices. We got the ex-vice president, Obama's friend.
Yeah, Obama's friend. And see, and you're right. That is the biggest danger in going with somebody who is not Bernie or who is not Elizabeth Warren, in that they're promising, broadly speaking, a return to normalcy. Normalcy is not enough for the historic moment that we're in right now. It's not enough.
No, I agree. I think we really need to think outside of the conventional limited box. And I really think that I think, for example, Amy Klobuchar is a great person, could be a good president, but she is unclear on any of the ideological issues that I care about.
Yeah, she is.
So, you know, all right, the choices are not so good. Let's go to the phones. Perhaps somebody can cheer me up. Edie, you're on the air.
Hi, I have answered you two questions. Can you hear me?
Yes. Boy, can I hear you.
I'm getting a lot of echo back. I don't know what's happening.
No, you sound good.
So
go ahead.
You asked, so how could someone who has all this money for investment and sees these problems not just redirect their investments to what is more humane and sane? And the caller mentioned about parasitism. Well, the reason why capital exists is because of the idea that a few people can take it away from the workers, the patients, the children, the families, the customers, all of nature, because they're greedy, because they're scared, because they believe things that aren't true, because they're disconnected from love. Because what's natural in the world is abundance and justice for everyone. It's not parasitism, it's synergy. It is mutual reciprocity. We breathe out carbon dioxide, the trees take that in and breathe out oxygen. The plants, the berries count on us spreading the seeds. We burn the ground around them to clear the way. They give us food. Everything in nature, every cell of our body, everything is about gratitude and gifting back. And when we come from a place of just looking at normal nature, I mean, which every indigenous peoples have done, we aren't destroying the commons, but over 500 years of Europeans being colonized, being separated, mother from child, the wisdom from the elders, the wise women, the herbalists, disconnecting them to become serfs, become workers, to become slaves, and then to attack others. And capitalism requires the boom of the false hope and getting away with things, and the bust, where now people are so terrified, distracted, weak, and poor, they fight among themselves.
I think that you have a point, but you're injecting a kind of feminist metaphysics into an argument which I think is a little more, sadly perhaps, sterile, and built around actual facts rather than mythic thinking. I have to say that.
All right, let's go to Pear. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Let's get back to growth for a bit. I think one reason for growth is that it depends on cheap oil, and we are running out of cheap oil. So there's not going to be any growth.
I actually have to disagree with you. Consequent to the destruction of the environment, we are not running out of cheap oil or cheap gas. We are, in fact, in a petrol paradise. And what we're really running out of is healthy air and healthy environment. That's the scary part of that.
Well, let me go into detail, a little bit of detail.
Okay.
The first oil well in Pennsylvania, that was 1859. They struck oil at 69 feet. Now you got to drill under the oceans, horizontal drilling, fracking. All of this is very expensive. they have this energy ratio which is going down all the time.
Well, that's true.
Okay, so the cheap oil is really gone, and it's what drives the economy. And the fracking is a kind of a losing proposition. Fracking is, from what I understand, no fracking company is making money. They are existing on the basis of new investments, which keep coming in because they think it's going to save us, but it's not. And so without cheap energy, without growth, that's what capitalism depends on.
Okay, well, I see your point. I also think, however, that it's a long, long way from where we are now to the place where the system collapses because we run out of oil. I got to say that.
Yeah.
I think that what we're really facing, and what I've been and you've been arguing, is that it is inherent in the system of capitalism that money will accrue, that power and wealth will always accrue at the top.
Yeah.
It's not an arguable point.
Yeah.
Now, will it drag the rest of us along? Will we all have housing? Will we all have jobs? Will we all have an environment? And this is the most important one, perhaps, that is a place that's safe for us to grow and become a culture of health. I don't think so.
Yeah. I would argue, though, that tendency is not restricted to capitalism. Wealth and power have always accrued at the top of whatever economic system.
Well, right. I'm not suggesting that there's some magic process whereby we can turn into what? I don't know, some woo-woo land? No, I don't think that's possible. But I think we need to recognize the realities of the situation. We need all of us to speak to everyone we know and people we don't know to point out the advantages of a system that combines the elements of wealth with the elements of humanity. And that's something we've totally lost at this point. That's what the Northern European powers still have.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. All right, coming up this morning on KBOL at 9 on Alternative Radio, we hear part two of a two-part series from the editor of Tikkun magazine, Rabbi Michael Lerner, about faith, politics, and the left. At 10 on Flashpoints, they feature a report on the massive expansion of the Dakota Access Pipeline. At 11 on Stage and Studio, D-May speaks with Jenna Yokoyama and Ken Yoshikawa about their part in the upcoming production of The Journal of Ben Uchida at Oregon Children's Theater, about how they've used their artistic talents to bring awareness about the imprisonment of Japanese Americans during World War II.
You know, this has been revived now. People are now aware of the fact that we ran concentration camps for no really legitimate reason during World War II, purely racist reasoning.
Right. I don't know that people were unaware of that. Well, some people have been.
I don't think it was understood widely enough on the West Coast, perhaps, but not the rest of the country.
Growing up in California public education system, we learned about it at length.
Really? All right. I didn't learn about it in school.
Yes.
In California.
Yeah, well, I did. Huh. Well, you were from the South, so maybe that's why.
Yeah.
All right. At 11.
Southern California is not California.
And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Galavan interviews installation artist Yoon-Hee Choi. Apologies for pronunciation, about her installation Wythe, now at the Front of House Gallery. All this and more coming up today on your listener-supported radio station, KBOO.
Yeah, you know, I'm presenting the Piketty argument, and you're familiar with it, because it's really important to understand this is a consequence of the way in which capitalism is managed in this society. There are ways to modify it. And that is all gone now with the Trump world.
Speaking of the Trump world, I think this might be a good idea or a good time to inject a little context into this conversation. Amidst this formulation we've been talking about, where capital has accumulated at the very top of the income scale, and there exists no incentive for it to be reinvested into infrastructure and labor and other things like that, we have this guy, Trump, who has now, in the wake of his acquittal in the Senate, on his impeachment charges.
And an inevitable acquittal.
Inevitable acquittal. Is now behaving as everyone with a brain realized he would. He is taking vengeance. He is purging his inner circle of political enemies. He is even calling on justices of the Supreme Court to recuse themselves from matters that involve him because of their bias against him. This is an autocrat moving to consolidate his power is what we're witnessing
now.
Right
isn't
now.
It the two women on the Supreme Court that
it
he
is
wants
the
to
two
get at?
Women mm-hmm. on the Supreme mm-hmm. Court.
Surprise, surprise.
Or two of the women on the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
So this is something we need to keep in mind here. We have an entrenched capitalist system that has failed working people and the environment. We have a would-be autocrat in charge who is moving to consolidate his power. So what happens, Joe, when unfettered capitalism bumps into autocracy? What do we call that?
What do we call that?
Call that fascism.
Fascism.
Yes.
Fascism.
Let's go back to the phones. Daniel, you're next.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Love your show. I think you guys are the Batman and Robin of, you know, conversation here during this time.
Oh, yeah. You should see Joe in his tights. Let me tell you something.
Oh, man. That would be...
What, men in tights? Is that where we're going?
Hey, if it brings in more KBOO donations, maybe we should try something, you know? Maybe you guys
no, don't go there. Let's just get on with what you were going to call about, man.
Okay, I have a list a little bit working backwards, even from last week's conversations. There was a gentleman, he said he was black, he voted for Trump, created kind of a fire spark. Let me say something. My parents voted for Trump, and this is, you know, I'm a generation kind of Z, or after X, or I forget what it's called, but, you know, the millennials have a challenge. They have to go against their parents, and, you know, I don't even speak with my parents. Because of our political separation.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Really, seriously.
Well, but you say you're sorry to hear that, and I thank you. But I believe millions upon millions of people are experiencing what I'm experiencing for the first time. The separation that I can't talk to my parents in the normal way that I grew up talking about. Okay, they're Polish. I'm a first generation American. They believe in tax. You know. Keeping their money, blah blah blah. But let me keep going, okay?
Okay.
You can't really turn off the Trump callers. You got to teach us how to talk to them, give them their points of views, and let you show me how to challenge that conversation or what he's thinking, because I have to address the same thing with my parents.
Well, let me interrupt you just for a second. It's hard to challenge it because it's not fact based. It's based on belief and mythology. And that belief in mythology, just like the God myth, is always overwhelming, and it's very, very difficult to use fact against it.
I hear you. I hear you, sir. But let me tell you this. Feelings are feelings. They're not right or wrong. When you're in an argument with your significant other or whoever, you know, you got to listen to their feelings. Either it's yes or no, but it's just feelings. You know, there is no right or wrong. Sometimes you just got to address those feelings, and feelings do change.
Well, wait a minute. Let's make a distinction between right and wrong and between being being sensitive and listening well.
Can I just close up here?
Go ahead.
Okay, Bernie, you know, being compared to Castro, look at what Trump's doing in North Korea. I mean, it's literally slapback behavior, but going both ways. Okay, with that said, you know, I think Bernie will have a good chance in regards to conversations about Castro's background, because Trump's doing the same thing in North Korea. It's literally a mere reflection. Now, let me say this. With my parents, and I'm kind of going back, my parents and Trump, we have one common thing, is that we love the environment. If you look at hunters out there and you go on hikes, there's always a Republican out there loving nature. You have a way to break in your conversation about the Green New Deal with some people. You have an ability to crack an egg on that issue. And war. No one wants to see anyone go to war. So you have those two issues to at least kind of commonly gel on. And so, here we go. And here's my final conclusion, and I love your show. Citizens United is taking all the money and then putting it in the media mongols' hands. Who owns the media, and who profits from Citizens United with all these billions and billions of dollars being contributed? And I want to end it on that. Love your show. Thank you, guys.
Hey, thanks very much. yeah, I think the point he made about finding items of common interest about which lefties and righties can come to some sort of common agreement is important.
No,
because you're right.
That
is a wedge in the door from which you can move on to other, perhaps more controversial topics in a reasoned sort of way. Now, I might be fooling myself there, because I think reasoned discourse has largely become absent from American politics. But, you know, you always can hope, right?
Well, and it is interesting that many, many, many people, interestingly enough, young people, educated people too, are recognizing the value of having somebody who's willing to essentially be out in his liberal and left beliefs.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there are two such candidates, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. And I think that just off the top of my head, that'd be a great ticket.
I think it would be too.
Yeah.
So would a Bernie Sanders, Stacey Abrams ticket.
Yes.
Yeah.
If she was willing to do it.
If she was willing to do it. All right. This is the Abe and Joe radio show on KBOO. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You can also write to us at the Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, or tweet at us at HonestAbe72. Jack writes into the Facebook page to say, the most socialist institution in the nation is the one administered by the Pentagon.
Well, that's true.
That is true.
That is really
true.
And
we really can't get enough of that socialism, can we?
Well, it's not socialism. It's it's fascist.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, the military. Come on.
All right, let's go to the phones. Boris, you're next.
Yes, hello. I listen to your show when I listen to your show to hear callers like Sean.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a couple of things that I'd like to talk to Sean about. So I'm going to leave my number at the front desk. And
okay.
I'd like to have Sean call in after 9 at 8032. And that's all I have.
All right. Hey, thanks. Sean, there's a message for you at the front desk.
Yeah. Sidebar.
Right.
All right. You know, folks, it is important to understand that this station and probably this program are rare in the United States airwaves and discourses. MSNBC, et cetera, with their liberalism, still utter the inanities and the misunderstandings that characterize a Cold War mentality. We're still seeing that.
Yeah, we are. And part of that is the fact that people are still wielding power who wielded it during the Cold War.
Yeah.
And look at the age of the front-running Democratic candidates, for example. They're not young, any of them.
No. In fact, the only young, the really young candidate on the Democratic side is so inexperienced and so arrogant. I don't know.
Well, I think he's also he's a candidate who's offering a back to normal platform. And as I mentioned earlier, that's not sufficient.
Well, what are we talking about when we're talking about normal?
When we talk about normal, we're talking, I think, just people feeling more or less at ease with their lifestyle and the way things are going along every day. But that's not good enough, right?
Let's be clear. We are in a crisis well beyond the normal politics of the world.
Indeed.
The planet is burning mm-hmm. up.
Right.
And that has to be dealt with. And the only way to deal with it, I think, is to be collectively aware and take action collectively.
Indeed. And it's the environment that is the primary reason why I say that a back-to-normal platform is insufficient to meet the challenges of the moment. Normalcy as we knew it or as we understand it is what brought us to the precipice of environmental disaster.
You know, I was very lucky in that when I went to college and university, I got almost a free ride for a variety of reasons, mm-hmm. scholarships, fellowships, and some political stuff. But the fact of the matter is that couldn't happen today. There's not a population of persons in significant numbers who benefit from free education. It's gone.
That's not true.
Yeah, it is.
The biggest block of people in the United States, the largest demographic, is the so-called millennial generation. There's more millennials than there are baby boomers.
So?
That is a huge population that would benefit from free education.
Oh, well, I'm not saying they wouldn't benefit. We're miscommunicating.
Okay.
I'm not saying they wouldn't benefit. I'm saying it's not there.
No, it isn't there.
That's all I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, all just right, a then. Miscommunication.
I agree. Let's go to Chris. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I wanted to point out we're in a moment of political breakup and realignment right now, and it's really exciting seeing Bernie Sanders just totally win in one state after another, and he's probably going to run all 50 states, and we should be celebrating that. And he's been vetted for his entire political career. Every opponent who's gone against him has said, look, you're a socialist, you're a communist, you wrote some rape fiction back in 1973, and none of it works. So he's been vetted. We're all waiting for the OPPO research, which doesn't exist. So
the OPPO research absolutely exists. It absolutely exists.
Oh, where is it? I'm waiting for
it. I refer you, now Google yourself this, I don't have the link handy. Kurt Eichenwald wrote a piece for Newsweek. This was right after Trump won the election. So bear in mind that it's a oh my God, Trump just won hot take. Okay, so there's some stuff to be sifted through, but he addresses the contention that Bernie would have won the general election in 2016 against Trump. Now, he may have won, but what Eichenwald points out is that he got a look at the OPPO research that the GOP had been preparing in the event that Bernie was the nominee. And there is enough there to be turned upon him in a big way. Go ahead.
I'm really lovely. This would be great to see. We're all waiting for this. But meanwhile, he's going to keep winning states.
Indeed, he will, yes. But we need to be prepared when this all comes out, because it's going to.
Well, how do we... Well, we only prepare by supporting left-leaning socialist candidates, or those who are not corrupt and not taking corporate money, of which there's two, Tulsi Gabbard and Bernie Sanders. Those are the only two.
Right. I agree that supporting somebody who doesn't take corporate money is an absolute must.
Well, it's a must. It's a desirable thing, but it's not easy to accomplish in this system.
But it's being done, though.
Bernie demonstrated it. Bernie's shown you can do it. If you're, and so has Tulsi. Tulsi's campaign is completely financed by small donors. Yeah.
Liz Warren is showing it, too, although I'd say her funds are not as pure as Bernie's.
No, she's not doing it. Her campaign starts, she rolled PAC money for her Senate campaign into her presidential campaign, and then she, early on in September, she said she's going to take big donor money in the general election, which means she doesn't understand how the system works. She's corrupt.
I think you're being
trying to climb.
I think you're allowing purity to get in the way of practicality here. Seriously.
Oh no, you can be practical. Well, Bernie Sanders is winning. He's running small donations. He's coming out as a democratic socialist. He's telling people they all deserve Medicare for all, and he's winning one state after another. He's going to run all 50 states, and there's nothing the democratic establishment could do. So we don't need to spread fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
I'm not contesting your claims. Yes, Bernie is proving that the small donor model can work spectacularly well, and right now it looks as if he is going to his momentum is going to carry him right on to the Democratic nomination. What I'm contesting is your claim that he has been sufficiently vetted for a nationwide campaign, and your claim that opposition research on him does not exist. That's what I'm saying.
Well, you got to show the proof. It's like the Russiagate conspiracy. You have to show proof. I've seen no proof of Russiagate conspiracy. I see no proof of this OPPO research.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to leave it there. The Russia election interference conspiracy has been proven many, many ways by many, many institutions, by many, many journalistic outfits. It happened. Russia did interfere with the 2016
and they're
campaign.
And they're okay? operating now.
They
right
are.
Now,
I want you to understand this. Now, the extent to which Russian meddling in 2016, the extent to which it was able to sway the outcome, we really don't know. But to pretend it didn't happen is a denial of reality at this point. Now, I also want to address again the question of opposition research on Bernie. It exists. It is there. It is waiting to be rolled out. Find the Eichenwald column from immediately after the 2016 election and read it.
Remember, this is an important fact, and it's not, I'm not just speaking to our caller, but to our audience in general. It is easy in this society where propaganda has been done for 50, 60 years to assume, well, longer, really, more than 100 years, to make everyone fearful of anything with the word socialism in it.
Yes.
And this is a very serious question. Now, am I a person who says, we can't run Bernie because he's a leftist? No, that's not my position. My position is, in order for this contest to be a fair contest, everyone has to register to vote and has to vote. And it isn't just in little old Oregon, it's the nation. And that's a huge challenge, particularly when the party structure, both of the Democrats, to some degree the Republicans, is so muddled.
Yes. I'm also not arguing against Bernie being the Democratic nominee.
No.
If he wins the nomination, then he should absolutely be the nominee, and the Democrats should absolutely get behind him. What I'm saying is we need to be prepared for a withering barrage of GOP opposition research and quite possibly the nastiest campaign that any of us have ever seen in our lives. And furthermore, we are going to be beat about the head by a whole bunch of stupid so large and profound, you will be amazed that such a quantity of stupid even exists in the universe. You will be amazed that the stupid doesn't collapse on itself and open a rift in space-time. That's how stupid it's going to be. But you know what? There's a whole lot of voters who respond to that stupid and will carry that with them to the ballot box. So our battle is not just on educating people about what democratic socialist priorities are, but also pushing through the barrage of stupid that's going to descend upon us.
You all act like stupid is a thing.
Stupid is a thing, Joe. It is a thing.
Oh, you just depressed me.
There is a stupid sphere that surrounds the planet. You didn't know that.
I mean, there's a quantity
of
stupid?
Yeah, you have a magnetosphere, an ionosphere, a radiosphere, all these things. The stupid sphere, it's much lesser known to science, but it exists.
I think that there is miseducation in our culture. Hey, we
stupid
got a
sphere.
We got a person who wants to challenge stupid, I hope. Hey, let's go on the air, 2318187. Dave, you'll have to make it quick.
Yeah, oppo research can be done against any Democrat. For instance, Michael Bloomberg, who is to the right of where Gerald Ford or Richard Nixon were on many issues,
yeah,
is really good on gun control and transportation, and that will be spun as Bloomberg wants to take away your guns and your pickup trucks.
Of course.
I think the best oppo research any Democrat could do, and this is fighting dirty and fighting low and attacking the president's family, but this would work. Donald Trump has a visibly creepy relationship with his daughter.
Oh, now, whoa. Wait.
I think that should be called into question. Lyndon Johnson once said it, and I can't even quote that on the air, but it should be done. It should be done. People should be too creeped out to vote for Donald Trump, no matter how far to the right their politics are.
But listen, all of this stuff is a known quantity, and none of it stopped any of his supporters from voting for him in 2016. Imagine just for a second, okay? Imagine if Barack Obama had been accused of paying off a porn star in the weeks leading up to an election. Imagine if Barack Obama had settled a $25 million fraud lawsuit in the weeks leading up to an election. Imagine if he had done even half of the things that Trump has been credibly accused of. It would be the end, the absolute end of his political career. Trump shrugs it off, and his supporters love him all the more. So I don't know if you're arguing for a sort of a vicious brand of oppo research from the left. I don't think it's going to be as effective.
Maybe it hasn't gone vicious enough yet.
If grab them by the you-know-what wasn't enough, I'm not sure what will be.
No, I really think that suggesting we go low is a mistake.
Thank you for the call.
There's a lot of reasons why it's a mistake. One of the reasons is it opens wide the possibilities of even more lying and stupidity and nastiness. I think that I really do believe that we have to stick to principle and stick to fact and make an argument that anyone can understand.
Yeah, I would agree. But for the simple reason I just explained, which is that it doesn't matter what you throw at Trump. It doesn't matter what he's done in his past. His base is never going to forsake him.
Well, and there's a whole population of people who are extremely, extremely cynical and consider, the people, for example, that go to his rallies, they're just amused. They don't take him seriously. They think he's entertaining and fun, and it puts down it socks it to the man and all that kind of thinking. And that is an addiction, really, entertainment versus fact.
Yeah. Agreed.
And that's a very scary thing. Remember, this guy got on the... This is NBC's fault, by the way, National Broadcasting Company. They put him on the air for how many years? 8 years? What was it?
Yeah.
And he was all the time foolish and silly and arbitrary and nasty and not really fun. But people loved it. They loved his dictatorial manner. They loved his arrogance. They loved his pretend wealth gathering and so on. They fell for it. They fell for it then, and I'm afraid if we're not very careful, they'll fall for again.
All right, John writes into the Facebook page to say, a while ago, Rolling Stone ran a piece with a comment that a poor child in Finland has a much better chance of achieving a comfortable living than a poor child in the United States, thanks to healthcare, education, including higher education, whether academic or technical education, etc. So many in the United States are still convinced that capitalism is all part of the American dream, that through hard work, anyone can succeed. But as the late George Carlin noted, it's called the American dream because you have to be asleep to believe it.
I like Carlin.
I like Carlin, too.
I miss Carlin.
We could sure use him right about
that. Yeah, no, I think that the mythologies of our system are so ingrained in our actual educational system, not to mention our popular culture, that the fight to make people understand what could be possible is a serious and difficult challenge. It doesn't mean that we should not accept that challenge, but it does mean that we're going to have to get everybody up out of their torpor and into action in order to make things better.
Yeah.
So that's really, you know, that's where I'm at.
All right, let's go to Linda.
Yeah, Linda, cheer me up.
I don't think I can cheer you up exactly, but the gentleman that said about going after the children, I think what's fair to go after the children, which is what's been published in things like the New York Times and other New York newspapers, but only briefly and small, which was that the judge found they dissolved the foundation, the Trump Foundation, and he and the judge, she, found all of his two sons and Ivanka and Trump guilty of using it as like a personal checkbook. They used their foundation that people gave money to for charitable causes, and they used it not only for his campaign, but each one of them individually used it like a checkbook. And she said she's trying to make a ruling. They cannot be allowed to be on any charitable board in New York. So if that isn't something to really say about a man, him and his children together, adult children, you know, corrupting the use of a charitable foundation, they found it apparently really just to take other people's money to use as a paycheck. And the judge was scathing in what she said. So there are legitimate, and this was coming out right during the impeachment trial as well. And there are legitimate things to take on his basic integrity and honesty, which should be done over and over again, and the press just lets it fly by. I mean, these were brief, small articles.
I think
I think we should bring up that stuff. This is how he's raised his family, to be crooks. He was raised by a crook. He is a crook. He's raising crooks.
Well, I think it's just a vast, I don't like to use a term like mafia because it has
I'm saying crook. I think it's fair.
Okay.
I'm taking your money for one thing and I'm spending it on another. That's crook.
Yeah, no, you're right, and I appreciate the call. Let's see if we can get someone else in, though. 231-8187. Ken, you're on the air.
Thank you for having me, Abe and Joe. I really appreciate it. I'll be real quick. I'm going to use the words of Thomas Jefferson. Four words of Thomas Jefferson. Revolution.
Four words.
That's four words, eh?
That's all I got to say.
Okay, man.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks for the call.
I don't see how that can happen.
Yeah, but that's a whole different conversation.
Yeah, it's a very different conversation. Right now, what we all need to do, we all need to recognize that, is that we cannot allow the perfect to get in the way of the practical in this contest.
I agree.
It doesn't matter who the hell the Democratic candidate is. Actually.
Oh, I disagree.
No.
But go on.
No. Trump is a fascist. Getting rid of fascism is very important. Remember the struggle in Germany prior to the Nazis, where the Social Democrats and the Communists fought it out, and in the process, the fascists took over.
Yeah, that's why we tune in, Joe. That's why I'm here every week. To hear you send us off just hanging our heads in a cloud of pessimism.
Well, that's just, you know, just a product of history, man.
It's true. I disagree with your claim that it doesn't matter who the Democratic nominee is.
It matters. I don't mean that literally. I mean that. No, what I mean literally is...
I say words on the air, but I don't mean them.
What I mean is the contest that has to be done now is anybody but Trump.
I agree. We all should support whoever opposes Trump, but I think it absolutely matters who that person is.
Well, I have preferences which I have not yet uttered.
Well, we have that to look forward to.
We have that to look forward to.
Thank you, everybody, who took part in our show today. We appreciate you. No end.
Really? It's
yeah, we
fun.
Do. Yeah.
Kind of.
Even when we don't agree with you.
Even so.
Yeah.
All right. You stay tuned. We'll be even more bizarre next week.
Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Community Advisory Board will meet on Tuesday, February 25th at 6 p.m.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9 o'clock. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, we hear part two of the two-part series from the editor of Tikkun magazine, Rabbi Michael Lerner, about faith, politics, and the left. Then at 10 on Flashpoints, they feature a report on the massive expansion of the Dakota Access Pipeline. At 11 on Stage and Studio, Dime speaks with Jenny Yokoyama and Ken Yoshikawa about their part in the upcoming production of The Journal of Ben Uchida at Oregon's Children's Theater, and about how they've used their artistic talents to bring awareness about the imprisonment of Japanese Americans during World War II. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Galavan interviews installation artist Yoon-Hee Choi about her installation, Wythe, on now at the Front of House Gallery.
Every poll that you see taken, you see 70% of the population in favor of many of the liberal programs and progressive programs that are being put forward. But they don't vote that way and they don't stand that way for one reason, because they feel that the left doesn't like them, that the left disrespects them. The linchpin of that is the left's attitude towards religion and spirituality, in which religiophobia is almost universal in major parts of the left. The feeling that we give them